How can you stay psychologically flexible, even in the face of holiday obstacles and stress? That's what we're going to talk about today on Your Life and Process. Welcome back. I'm Diana Hill, and I like to see myself as your psychological flexibility guide. And what that means is I help you stay open and present and engaged in your life and really pursuing the things that matter most to you, even when life is challenging. And this is a time of year that many people look forward to, the holidays. There's beautiful lights and cozy fires and family and good food and gift giving. But it's also a time when I notice that folks, including myself, have a lot of increased stress. I would say that as a therapist, my practice is busiest right before the holidays. And it's a time that people find challenging because maybe they're facing a family gathering where there's conflict, there's a lot of social anxiety going to parties and events. There's financial stress. Maybe you're spending more money than you have or feel pressure to do so. People feel overwhelmed with just too many to-dos. And many people also fall back into old patterns and habits. So the holidays are often a time when people use more alcohol than they like. They get off track with exercise. We stop prioritizing self-care or get into conflicts with people that you love. So I will certainly have some New Year's episodes lined up for you to get us all back on track in the New Year's, things like Habit Change with Jed Brewer and Time Management with Cassie Holmes. But I also thought, wouldn't it be nice if we didn't go into the New Year quite so trashed as sometimes we do? And maybe you would be nice if you had some motivation to stay aligned with your values and hold on to the things that are most important to you and remain flexible and adapt to this most wonderful time of the year. Those of you that are new to acceptance and commitment training, welcome. And there's sort of a general premise in ACT that we are faced with two choices. The first choice is to believe what your mind says and escape your feelings, and that choice will move you towards suffering. The second choice is to hold your thoughts lightly, accept feelings, and move towards your values. So when we are looking at the holidays ahead, I'm hoping that we can do the latter of holding our thoughts lightly, accepting our feelings, and moving towards our values. And today I'm going to walk you through the six core processes of ACT and how they could be applied to this holiday season. I'm hoping to give you some concrete strategies that you can take right away, put into your life, because that is what I'm really passionate about. I really see my mission as being a translator of ACT, as well as somebody who can maybe look at boots on the ground. What does it look like in your day to day? I'm hoping that you can reclaim the holidays for yourself so that they do become a time where there's more meaning and purpose and connection. As somebody who's in recovery from an eating disorder, I spent a lot of years hating the holidays, and I often will work with clients who come in with similar struggles, whether it's struggles with alcohol or family, this feeling of dread that can happen this time of year. And for me, it was a feeling of not having choice, because I would face the holiday season with a lot of expectations for myself about what it needed to look like and how I needed to perform and be. And that often didn't match up with what I needed to do for myself in order to take care of myself. And I remember the year that I decided I was going to reclaim Thanksgiving because it was the most dreaded holiday for me, which is often the case for folks with eating disorders. It's like a day dedicated to food is terrible. And I reclaimed it in a number of ways. I mean, I reclaimed it by saying, first of all, I have to do what works for me and my body on this holiday. I'm going to eat breakfast and I'm going to eat lunch, even though we're having Thanksgiving dinner, because the pattern for many of folks around Thanksgiving is just to not eat, right? And then I also decided that I needed to put in little moments of like reconnection, one eye in for myself. And the way that I did that was by infusing little walks into the Thanksgiving day where I would take a break and go for a walk to get some flowers to put on a pie, or go for a walk and collect some things from the garden. And it became sort of these like moments of checking in with myself so that I could go back into Thanksgiving and feel more grounded. And then the last thing that I did around Thanksgiving was refocus my attention around the meaning of it, because I was so caught up in my fears around food and eating and rules and rigidity, I had lost track with why Thanksgiving was actually something that would be important to me. And I know that Thanksgiving is actually a holiday we're rethinking in terms of the original meaning behind it, but it became more of a gathering with my family. And at the time that I had reclaimed my Thanksgiving, my grandpa was still alive. And I remember making this commitment with my therapist before going into Thanksgiving that my focus was going to be around having conversations with my grandpa. And he's gone now. And I am so grateful that when I reclaimed Thanksgiving for myself, I got that time back with him rather than the time that I had spent many, many years just in my head and in my own story about Thanksgiving and how much I hated it. So we are going to reclaim the holidays for you too. And the first step for you is to get on board with what we call in ACT creative hopelessness. And creative hopelessness is the hopelessness of the behaviors of avoiding pain. So let's face it, the holiday season is a mixed bag. It can be painful to watch family feuds play out. It can be painful to be interrogated by family members about why you're not in a relationship or why you haven't had a child yet or whatever it is that people ask you about. It can be painful to just sit through long lines at CVS and buy wrapping paper, right? So there is a degree of pain associated with the holiday season, but really we have to look at what is hopeless in response to that pain. And we have to get hopeless about a few things. So it's hopeless to try and get your family member to change. It's hopeless to try and be perfect. It's hopeless to try and control your feelings. It's hopeless to compare yourself to others. Actually getting hopeless about our attempts to try and control or avoid pain. Because your brain will naturally try and escape feelings with the same effort that it escapes physical danger. Some thoughts and emotions are just as frightening as physical threat. You can think about this for yourself. Have you ever felt so afraid of something or someone that it was as excruciating as physical pain? Or maybe felt grief and loss and it felt like your heart was being ripped out? There are a lot of little pains and big pains that can show up during the holiday season. In ACT, we often see experiential avoidance and fusion as what contributes to our suffering. You feel anxious around your in-laws and you drank too much at dinner, but then you end up saying things that you regret. The anxiety around your in-laws isn't the problem that is making things worse. It's actually the drinking, right? You feel irritable at your kids, so you yell at them to get ready faster, and then the angrier you get. Or maybe you feel guilty afterwards. You feel worried about money, so you don't keep track of your spending, only to feel more worried. Or maybe you feel rejected by a friend, so you don't call them back, but then you feel more rejected when they don't invite you to the next event. So you can see how these attempts to avoid the pain of worry or rejection or regret or irritability or anxiety have a boomerang effect. You get more problems and more pain. So the first step in staying on track during your holidays is identifying those avoidance patterns for yourself, the things that you do to try and avoid the pain of the holidays that actually makes things worse. And I am a big fan of like writing down a list. Here are my avoidance strategies. And if you haven't gotten my Striving Toolkit yet, it could be really helpful because I have in there like an avoidance habit loop that you can actually map out your avoidance patterns. And then there's the creative part. So once you get hopeless about the behaviors, and just a reminder, it's not you that's hopeless, it's these behaviors that are hopeless, then we get to get creative about some alternatives. What do we do when anxiety shows up? What do we do when regret shows up? What do we do when grief shows up? What do we do when irritability shows up? That's where psychological flexibility comes in, because psychological flexibility helps you be able to be with those feelings and thoughts without getting hooked by them. In many ways, you can think about it as like a fish that's swimming down a stream and a hook gets dropped into the water and you don't take the bait. Because if you were to take the bait, it would send you off in another direction where you don't want to be headed. So step one, creative hopelessness. What are the behaviors that are hopeless for you that you know from past holiday seasons have not worked for you? Make a list, get clear on what they are so you can get creative in doing something different. And then step two is just a little detour into compassion, because my goodness, if you want to change a behavior, you're more likely to change it if you practice self-compassion. And there's a good amount of research behind this. There was a series of studies at UC Berkeley by Juliana Brines and Serena Chen, and they looked at self-compassion versus self-esteem. So self-esteem is telling yourself positive things, like you're really smart and you're really beautiful and you always throw the best party. Versus self-compassion is, this is hard and everybody has a hard time sometimes. And I'm here to encourage you and support you and understand that we all have weaknesses and shortcomings and understand that we all make mistakes. And in this series of studies, they had people first write about their biggest weakness or shortcoming. And after they wrote about their biggest weakness or shortcoming, so you can think about that for yourself, what's your biggest weakness? You don't even want to look at it, right? Sort of like shame hole. But we all have them. I would say I have a big weakness around double booking people and not looking at my schedule. That would maybe isn't my biggest one. I have a really big shortcoming as well around friendships, where I can tend to let friendships kind of slide and not stay on top of calling people back. So if you consider one of your biggest shortcomings, then what they did is they gave half of the group a self-compassion intervention. Imagine that you are talking to yourself about this weakness from a compassionate and understanding perspective. What would you say? And then in the second group, they gave a self-esteem intervention where they said, imagine you're talking to yourself about this weakness from the perspective of highlighting your positive qualities. So in the compassion intervention, you may say something to yourself like, everybody has weaknesses and this is something that you can work on. And I believe in you. And I see that it's hard for you to maybe call friends back because you are so busy sometimes. And sometimes it's hard to prioritize your time. And I want to encourage you that you can maybe change this behavior. Whereas a self-esteem intervention would say, but you are a good friend in all these different ways. And you do a good job in all these ways. And you aren't as bad as you think you are, right? So the folks that had the self-compassion intervention actually were more motivated to make a change than the folks that were in the self-esteem intervention. And when they did another study looking at folks talking about something that they regret, a time in your recent past when you did something that you felt was wrong and you experienced guilt or remorse, you can think about that for yourself, something where you felt guilt or remorse around. And again, those that were given a self-compassion intervention had greater motivation to make amends and commit not to make that transgression again in the future. So going into the holidays, we may have regrets. Going into holidays, we may have weaknesses. And self-compassion is one of those skills that actually will not lead you to be complacent, but leads you to be more motivated to care for yourself and care for others and stay aligned with your values. There's a line from Lucinda Williams' song, her song called Compassion, and it says, have compassion for everyone you meet because you don't know what's going on there down where the spirit meets the bone. I've made a little playlist that I use on retreats and with groups that has these types of songs in it to remind us of these messages. So in our show notes, I'll put any song that I mentioned from that playlist down there, but the compassion one from Lucinda Williams is especially good. Okay, so we get hopeless and then we respond to our hopelessness with self-compassion. And then the third step of staying on track during the holidays that for me is always the sort of the foundation of ACT. Like, why do we even want to be psychologically flexible in the first place? It's because we want a rich and meaningful life. It's because we want to have a sense of purpose. It's because you care about things and you want to pursue those things that you care about, even in the face of challenges. And so it's about your values, right? Values are the direction that we want to head. And we have multiple choice points in our day where we can choose to turn away from our values because we're avoiding pain, or we can choose to turn towards our values because we are motivated to pursue what matters. During the holidays, there's too many things to do. Or for some folks, they don't have enough to do. They feel like there isn't enough, you know, on their plate. So with values, it can be the motivation that gets you going to either put some things on your plate, even though they're scary, or to take things off of your plate, even though it's scary to do so. I loved interviewing Erin Westgate. It was really fun to talk to her about these three components of a well-lived life. And if you remember that interview, we talked about fun. So fun and pleasure is one component. We talked about meaning. And we talked about psychological richness. And one really simple strategy that you can do this holiday season is you can write down all of your tasks. So on my holiday task list, I have things like the live nativity. I have things like volunteering to bring food to the teachers at school. I have things like so-and-so's, party and wrapping presents. You know, everything that's on sort of the to-do list for you. And then I want you to make some columns on a sheet of paper where you just put at the top of one column, fun, and the top of another column, meaning, and the top of another column, psychological richness. And then the last column is obligation, should, okay? And then you take your task list and sort them. Sort them into, is this part of the fun pile? Is this part of the meaningful pile? Because remember, things can be meaningful, but not a lot of fun. And psychological richness, same thing. Is this helping me have a perspective shift or grow? Is this something novel and new that I don't usually do, you know, sort of about a new culture or going to a new place that would help me grow in a certain way? And then obligation and should is the last list. And when you sort out your activities into these different categories, look for the ones that meet more than one category of a well-lived life. The should and obligation list, if it's only on that category of should and obligation, then we need to start to take a look at whether you want to keep it going, you know? You know, I was thinking about, there was next week at my kids' school, they were having parents bring in food for the teachers. And when I was going down the task list of what you could bring, some of the things were easy peasy, like just grab a couple of, you know, tortillas from the store and bring in some tortillas. Some of the things were a little bit more involved, like make the fajita vegetables for the tacos. And then also the choice of not doing it at all. I looked at my week and I had too many things on my week, too much scheduled. My first thought was, oh, this is just a should and I'm not going to do it. But then I checked in a little bit, like turned two eyes into my body, and I felt a little ping of regret. A little ping of regret, like, oh, well, I actually want to give back to these teachers in some way. So then the second thing that I did is, well, how much fun would it be for me to go get the taco shells versus how much fun would it be for me to cut up some vegetables? And so I thought about that for a bit and realized, actually, it's kind of, for me, that's fun. I really enjoy periods of time of just chopping vegetables. I think it's sort of an activity that lets me let everything go and just be in the kitchen. And I really enjoy doing it with my son. So it's like, oh, okay, that could be fun. And then how much meaning does actually doing this give me? It gives me a lot of meaning because I adore teachers. I know that they give 110% to my kids and help raise my kids, that I want to give back to them. So there was a lot of meaning there, not so much in psychological richness. And all of a sudden I looked at that obligation line and it felt different to me. It didn't feel as much like a should. It more felt like this is something that's in line with my values that I want to do. So when you start to put things in these different categories, how much fun is this going to give me? And fun is important. I've had clients who come in who are in service positions or who have kids with special needs who have talked about, I just don't have enough fun in my life. I have way too much meaning and way too much psychological richness. I need more fun. So it's important for you to have fun during the holidays. Do a step that is magical and fun. And it's also important for you to find meaning and psychological richness, and then maybe dial down some of the obligations or look differently at the obligations. This is where values become sort of a check-in with yourself. And oftentimes I'll use the metaphor of the guitar, where you play the strings and you listen in for yourself what feels like it's in tune or out of tune. The last thing that I want to say about meaning and values during the holiday season is that when you start to tap into what's meaningful to you, what's important to you, you also can take a look at how do you want to show up. And one of the things that can be really helpful around that is to imagine that you were looking back on this holiday season and watching a video of you at that party or on Christmas morning or at Hanukkah dinner. What would you want to see? And what would be most important to you to see in the ways in which you are engaging? Okay, so that is your third step. Your fourth step in being psychologically flexible and staying on track with these holiday season is to not believe your mind. Okay, so if I could transcribe what your head tells you about yourself and make it visible to others, you would be mortified. Our minds say things all day long, and many of those things weren't even yours to begin with. They are the voice of your mother. They're the voice of your high school coach. They are the voice of society. And many of those things you may not even believe in. And yet we often will just follow our head like it is the truth with a capital T. I recently led this retreat in Arizona with a group of over 30 therapists from all over the US. It was really fun. And I did this exercise where I had these therapists write down on post-it notes. So one thought per note of the thoughts that they have during a therapy session about themselves as a therapist and the thoughts they have about their clients. Not like therapists are ever judgmental, right? So they wrote down the judgmental thoughts, the sticky thoughts, the unhelpful thoughts. And I used post-it notes, sticky notes, on purpose because our thoughts can be so sticky, right? They can just stick to us and get in the way of us being able to show up maybe how we want to show up. Because if you're having the thought, I'm a terrible therapist, you know, it's going to impact how you perform, right? If you believe that thought to be true. Or if you're having judgmental thoughts about your poor client and you believe those thoughts to be true, it may be harder to have compassion for your client, right? So then what I had these therapists do was take these sticky notes and put them all over their bodies. And you can actually go see this on my Instagram. I have a little quick video of it where you can see the therapists put the sticky notes all over their bodies with their thoughts on them and then get up and walk around the room and let other people read them. And there was this moment of like terror. Oh no, other people are going to read my thoughts. But it was so liberating because when they actually got up and walked around the room, they realized that they weren't alone in a lot of these thoughts. We all have thoughts about our bodies and we all have thoughts about other people and we all have self-critical thoughts from time to time. The problem isn't so much the thoughts. The problem is how we are trying to control our thoughts or how we believe our thoughts. So getting a little bit of space from your thoughts is called cognitive diffusion in ACT. It is a very helpful tool and recognizing that your thoughts are not your destiny. When I spoke with Joseph Sirochi, he talked about this, that oftentimes the best way to help people with their thoughts is by changing their behaviors. Prove your mind wrong, you know, and your thoughts come along for the ride. So you could even just imagine, you know, sticky notes of your thoughts all over your body and still going, like still doing that thing that you value, still showing up with your in-laws, even though you have judgmental thoughts about your in-laws and maybe not letting those judgmental thoughts cloud your perception. Because when we get too stuck to our thoughts, we don't really see clearly what is. So, step four, get some space from your thoughts. And related to that is also let go of your stories. In ACT, we call it self as context, which is the recognition that you are a self in a context. And that self is always changing. You know, you are more than your experiences. As Jennifer Shepherd Payne said on the summit that I recently did, Jennifer has worked to modify and adapt ACT for Black populations. And she's also a poet. And so she has taken the ACT processes and really put words to them so that they're much more relatable. So this concept of self as context, which is the sort of original wording of ACT, she calls it, you are more than your experiences. And when we are practicing compassion, you know, you never know what's going on there where the spirit meets the bone, right? When you practice self-compassion, you are practicing this sort of letting go of your story and getting more flexible with your story. And you can know that you're caught in a story about yourself when you get caught in these statements of, I am, I always, I am not, or I never. Or if you're saying those things about another person, they are, they always, they never, they are not. When you get fused with these stories about yourself, you start to look for evidence to confirm them, right? Or stories about other people, you look for evidence to confirm them. We've all done that within our families where, you know, oh, so-and-so is always late. And then anytime they're on time, you don't notice it. But every time they're late, you put a little, you know, little money in that jar of, see, I'm right, they're always late, right? Anytime you're caught in I'm right, they're wrong, you are in a story. And you are more than your experiences. You are more than these stories, and so are other people. So letting go of the stories a little bit, stepping back into sort of your observer self, and having a beginner's mind, you know, beginning anew. Can you step into the next social event with a beginner's mind, with an open mind, with an open perspective, and have the capacity to get behind somebody else's eyes, what it might be like to be them? This is very helpful, especially in the interpersonal realm, as we navigate, you know, being in a relationship with one another, which is hard. So let go of your stories. And I would say, adding to our playlist, so we have Lucinda Williams on our playlist. Another song that I often will play in my workshops is India Arie's song, which is Worthy. And it's a beautiful song about you are worthy and everyone is worthy. You are more than your experiences. Alrighty, so we are moving our way around psychological flexibility, staying on track during the holidays. And we've talked about creative hopelessness. We've talked about self-compassion. We've talked about values. We've talked about what to do with our thoughts, those sticky thoughts. We've talked about what to do with our stories about who we are and who we are not, right? And this next process, which is one that is really liberating for us, is the step of acceptance. I did a whole podcast on acceptance. You can go listen to it about how my skirt got stuck in my underpants. This is a very acceptance move for me to share about that on a podcast. But acceptance, yeah, this is one where maybe the wording isn't always so helpful. I loved Jennifer Payne again when she talked with me on the summit. She called it is what it is. Oh, if we said that to ourselves on a regular basis, it would help a lot. You know, you're in the grocery store, there's long lines. You don't like it. Your mind is saying all sorts of things about it. You're ruminating about people and worried about the future. Breathing in, breathing out. It is what it is. And a lot of times, you know, we think that acceptance is about bad stuff, but it's also holding the good stuff lightly too and not grabbing so tightly to things, right? So if you can imagine your hand like picking up something that's good that you really want, and you hold it in a fist and you hold your fist sort of upside down and squeeze the heck out of it, right? Like, I am going to make this experience last and be perfect, and I never want, you know, the holidays to end. Some people can get that way about the good stuff, right? Where you can grip it so tightly that you squeeze the life out of it. And then we can also do that with the bad stuff, that now it's like, if you can imagine reaching out and grabbing the stuff that you don't like with a fist, and you're holding it so tightly because you don't want it to escape. You want to control it. You know, you want to control what your mom does or doesn't do, or you want to control your body, what it looks like, or you want to control whether your partner is drinking or not, right? Or maybe you want to even just control yourself, right? And that same kind of gripping with the fist is problematic with stuff you don't like because you're using so much energy to control, you're missing out on the experience. And often the control strategies that you're using, either to hold on to the stuff you like or prevent the stuff you don't like from getting out, have a lot of secondary problems associated with them, right? So the gesture or metaphor that I'll sometimes do with clients in session around acceptance is take that fist, and you can do this with me right now, like squeeze your fist as hard as you can and squeeze in it stuff you don't like and hold on and grip to stuff that you do like and notice what that feels like. You can feel your little nails gripping into your palm, right? What if you were to turn your palm over and let the things that you like and the things that you don't like sit on this open palm? Hold it lightly. It is what it is. And the one guarantee that we have is that it will change. The good stuff will change and the bad stuff will change. And the best way to be with the good stuff and the bad stuff is to be present and hold it lightly. Joseph Sirochi and I talked about this a bit when we talked about change and how change is inevitable. It's whether you're harnessing it for the good or not. And the best way to harness change for the good is to hold it with acceptance, with willingness, with an open mind and an open heart. So you could step into the holidays with it is what it is. And you can also step into the holidays with breathing in, I am here, and breathing out, I am home, you know, being at home in the present moment. I love talking with Brother Fapu about acceptance and the way in which he practiced such beautiful acceptance when he was attending to Thich Nhat Hanh. And I think that that was such a model for us of even in the suffering, even in the painful stuff, when we practice acceptance, we can find really beautiful, beautiful things. There's a book that I read and reread in the mornings by Pema Chodron, who is a Buddhist nun. And she wrote the book, Taking the Leap. And I have all of these sort of like earmarked and underlined stuff that I reread and maybe journal about in the mornings. And I earmarked this page, page 90 of Taking the Leap, because I thought it was such a good example of acceptance as well as the process of being present and compassion. And this is what she said. She says, one of the most helpful methods I've found is the practice of compassionate abiding. This is a way of bringing warmth to unwanted feelings. It is a direct method for embracing our experience rather than rejecting it. So the next time you realize that you're hooked, you can experiment with this approach. Contacting the experience of being hooked, you breathe in, allowing the feeling completely and opening to it. The in-breath can be deep and relaxed. Anything that helps you let the feeling be there, anything that helps you not push it away, then still abiding with the urge and edginess of feelings such as craving or aggression, as you breathe out, you relax and give the feeling space. The out-breath is not a way of sending the discomfort away, but of ventilating it, of loosening the tension around it, of becoming aware of the space in which the discomfort is occurring. So you can think about that difficult person to be around. Can you breathe in and make space with that discomfort in your body? And can you breathe out and just kind of ventilate a little bit? You can think about that event that you're anxious about attending. Can you breathe in kindness and warmth to the anxiety in your body? And again, breathe out some room, some space, some air around it. That is really the practice of acceptance. And when we learn this skill of being present with acceptance, it opens up all sorts of things for us, right? So it opens up the ability to take committed action, which is really the last process that I want to talk with you all about today during the holidays. Taking committed action. When I spoke with Kelly Wilson, he described it as tending to the needs of the day, the little patterns of behavior, the patterns of valuing in your life. He talked about his early days of sobriety and how when he had his first job of waking up and going to work when he was newly sober, his committed action was just not to harm anyone, right? May I not be harmful to folks today? And sometimes that's enough, you know, can I be in this space without being bratty or being harmful? I mean, I know for myself, when I go back to my family of origin, somehow I like slip into my 14-year-old bratty self again, and I can feel her coming on, you know, the eye rolls and the judgments and everything just comes back so quickly. So the committed action for me is to notice that pattern. And how can I practice ahimsa, non-harming in this moment? How can I practice that? What would that look like with my behavior? How could I dial up the appreciation and dial down the judgment, external judgment? And for yourself, you may also think about the holidays as a time when you may neglect yourself, your self-care, your healthy deviant behaviors. We talked with Pilar Gerasimo about how hard it is to be healthy and in a world that is, especially in the US, that is so unhealthy, you know, and how to hold on to those few things that are really important to you, whether it's your sleep or it's your exercise habits or it's your regular meal times or it's your short morning meditation practice, how to hold them lightly, but with commitment. And those may be the grounding, you know, sources for you during this challenging time. You don't have to throw everything out just because it's the holidays. What if you were to hold on just to a couple and even get flexible with them? You know, that your morning meditation can be done even with kids around. And you could do it when they're in the room with you. You could just close your eyes for a little bit and just listen to the sounds of your children playing for 1 or 2 minutes. And maybe that's the way in which you are meditating right now when your kids are home from school. And ultimately, I really think that committed action is about having your behaviors, your outsides, match your values, what you care about on the inside. Having that be congruent. So that congruency can show up in little ways and in big ways. Sometimes the little actions that we take, the little acknowledgments of one another, the acknowledgments of people that are helping us, you know, the Trader Joe's workers that are working on Thanksgiving morning because you forgot the condensed milk or whatever, and there they are. Or the people that are, you know, traveling long distances, and so are you, and we're all in the airport together, recognizing that how you act has a ripple effect. And when you act in alignment with your values, you spread that ripple of meaningful action to those that you meet. So there we are. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of How to Be Psychologically Flexible and Stay on Track During the Holidays. We worked our way through the 6 core processes of ACT, the process of values, knowing what matters most to you, the process of stepping back from your thoughts, cognitive diffusion, the process of taking perspective on yourself, and acceptance, allowing what is and being willing to experience what is. The process of being present, and then finally committed action, taking meaningful action in your day towards your values. And all of it is encompassed in a big warm blanket of compassion, compassion for yourself and compassion for others. Many blessings this holiday season. I hope that it is full of warmth and connection and meaning, and without a doubt, it will also have some challenges as well. I hope you navigate them with psychological flexibility, and I will see you next week. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Your Life in Process. When you enter your life in process, when you become psychologically flexible, you become free. If you like this episode or think it would be helpful to somebody, please leave a review over at podchaser.com. And if you have any questions, you can leave them for me by phone at 805-457-2776 or send me a voicemail by email at podcast@yourlifeinprocess.com. I want to thank my team, Craig, Angela Stubbs, Ashley Hyatt, and thank you to Ben Gold at Bell & Branch for his original music. This podcast is for informational and entertainment purposes only, and it's not meant to be a substitute for mental health treatment.